Welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. Tonight on Lunatic Mondays, we have the team who wrote the Witch's Book of Spellcraft. Well, half of the team, actually. We have Jason Mankey and Ari Mankey. And just to do like I always do to introduce them with their biography, Ari has been practicing witchcraft and creating spells for over 20 years with her husband, Jason. She runs two covens in the San Francisco Bay Area. Jason is a third degree Gardnerian high priest and helps run two witchcraft covens in the San Francisco Bay Area. Jason is a popular speaker at pagan and witchcraft events across North America and Great Britain. He writes a blog on Pathos Pagan, which I am always reading, and called Raise the Horns. Jason is the author of Transformative Witchcraft, The Witch's Athame, The Witch's Book of Shadows, and co-author of The Witch's Altar. And you also did something for Yule.
Llewellyn's Little Book of Yule and the Horned God of the Witches. Very and cool. The Witch's Wheel of the Year.
Excellent.
So thank you for not having the updated biography, Laura. Anywho, welcome, welcome, welcome to Lunatic Mondays. How are you?
We're doing real well. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm doing great. I mean, it's almost not freezing any longer here in Chicago. So, you know, it's good. So I have to say, as always here in Lunatic Mondays, not that I carry a chip on my shoulder, but Ari,
yeah,
this is your first interview.
It is. I'm like Bigfoot. Everyone's heard of me. Some people have seen glimpses, but no one's actually really seen full proof that I exist. But here I am.
There she is.
You're the first.
Yes. And I'm very excited to have you. Thank you for saying yes. And thank you for being here. And Jason, thank you for taking the back seat for a minute. But because we all want to hear more from you, can you tell us a little bit about how did you started on this path of witchcraft?
Okay. I started out as a Catholic, which is, I think, a common story for a lot of people. I went to Catholic schools, kindergarten through 12th grade. Family is still very involved in that church. And I tried really hard when I was a teenager to become more involved in the Catholic Church, but that's very difficult as a woman. I think the turning point of my path had been, you know, I was in all the choirs, I was, you know, I'd do all kinds of stuff. And then I had the opportunity to become a Eucharistic minister in high school in my junior year. And, you know, the priest in my parish brought me in front of the entire church and said, "This is the future of the Catholic Church." And after that exact mass, my grandmother came up to me, grabbed me with her scary claw hand and said, "I know you think you're helping, but you're gonna go to hell for this." And I could, what? because she believed the moment my unconsecrated female hands touched the host, Jesus fled it. And I was giving people the false idea that they were receiving communion.
Wow.
And so that started this path of questioning what the hell kind of weird ass religion am I in that when I want to be a part of it and want to help, I'm going to go to hell. And then it just so happened that across the street from the coffee shop that I would spend most of my time after school or during school at, there was a New Age store. And so I walked across the street one day. The first thing that drew me in were the pretty shiny stones because magpie. And it built from there. I mean, I'd always had a bit of a fascination with, you know, Greek mythology and things like that, but it was always just kind of a passing, like, yeah, I read the thing, but it never really meant much. But when I started like discovering that people actually still worshiped those gods, and there was actually options out there, and maybe I'm not going to burn in hell if I want to actually be an active participant in my own spirituality, things changed. Then I went to college. I literally met this man the third day on college campus on my freshman year. It was love at first sight for me. He noticed me a couple weeks later. and then, you know, that's history. That's how I got into it. There was a student group on Michigan State campus that he was running, and I immediately got involved, and that started this path, and it's never quite stopped.
That is wonderful. And I want to go more into like the story of you two together, but how hard or how easy it has been to bring that original love of serving people with this like Catholic perspective, and then now running two covens, still serving people, but in a completely different setting.
I think it fits really well, actually. And actually, I use the same philosophy in how I lead people in my work, which is no religion at all, my friends, you know, because I work in science. It's always a matter of wanting to bring people the same, you know, knowledge and joy and understanding that I have. And it's never, ever been about setting myself above anything. I never went into this thinking, I want to be a third degree high priestess of a coven. That was never a goal. It was actually, I'm like, I don't want to lead things, you. But I wanted to be able to work with great people. I wanted to be able to learn and learn with others. And it just kind of turned into this. So it was more of a natural progression.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't help that he's a show off.
I was just going to say that the fact that you were dating the Led Zeppelin disciple help you be a compare.
Well, don't get me wrong. We only dated the first 3 months that we knew each other. And then we were friends for years, but then we got married. But different story. It just, he was definitely a big influence in a lot of ways. But I don't ever feel like I was pressured by his own development. I was still able to like get to mine naturally. I mean, I was already kind of naturally bossy in my own way, with some serious control issues.
But also you have like theater background, which I don't have.
Yes.
So doing ritual with Ari, I learned things because she's much better at it than I am, because I didn't come from that sort of background.
That's true. I have an inner drama queen. So I'm a Gemini. I have two very different sides. The side that's definitely don't look at me and let me just do my stuff. And the side that's like, where's my spotlight?
Of course.
So I did have a background in theater and music and basically like being in a performance. And sometimes, like especially in large group ritual, it is a performance. And so having the knowledge of how to project and how to enunciate things and what's going to be the most dramatic way to do this. Do I stand over in the corner and say this, or do I walk up to the altar with my hands up? You know, it just... that really aided itself.
Even now, she sometimes says to me, presence.
Yeah.
Presence.
No, he'll try to do something. He's like still standing in the circle with everyone, like, walk up to the altar, idiot.
I love that. Is there a moment ever when you two are like serious, or are you always cracking jokes?
I think in ritual, we're serious.
Yes.
When the situation calls
for it, for sure.
Maybe not Ostara, but Samhain.
We're very serious at the grocery store.
I like that.
Very serious about our whiskey.
Oh, we still joke about that, though.
I think there are parts of the craft we take very seriously. Oh, yeah. I think our guard practice is pretty seriously. Our eclectic coven is serious, but you know, it shouldn't be serious to the point where people don't have fun.
Right.
Right. Yeah. If you're not enjoying what you're doing in ritual, why do it? Right. It's we left the drudgery of the Catholic Church or the whatever other church, right?
Yeah. It's mirth and reverence. So you have to have a good mix of both.
Yeah. And I think the reverence, as you say, you know, it should be fun, but sometimes it should be solemn to a degree, you know? And I love laughing, and you all know, like, you know, well, I've known Jason a little bit more than you because, you know, I thought you were a figment of his imagination until now.
Yeah.
But it's wonderful to get to know you actually, and eventually we'll meet each other in person. But I think humor and the ability to bring humor into our religion is a big thing that set us apart from other religions that are, you know, solemn all the time, and, you know, or all love and light, and absolutely only love and light, and no dark parts, no pimples, no freckles, no, like, that is unnatural. Thank you so much for giving us this background and for allowing us to get to know you a little bit better. You know, it's great that you said yes. And
these are things you've never told me before.
Well, that's the power of Laura Gonzalez. What can I say? All right. So, Jason, what have you been up to other than writing another 700 million books?
Well, you know, not very much because of the pandemic, obviously. You know, it shut everything down for 2 years. It was very strange not going to festivals for 2 years because that's been a big part of my life. It made it a little more challenging to write and do things. But over the course of the pandemic, I wrote 3 books, the Horned God book, the Witch's Book of Spellcraft. And then I have Modern Witchcraft with the Greek Gods coming out in December. Mm-hmm. So it's been busy in that sense with writing.
Yeah. And I know you are used to doing this collaborative work. I love myself. Now let's see if I can say it again. I know you've been doing this collaborative work before with other folks. How hard or how simple was it to write with your partner?
This was a different situation than I did. So I did The Witch's Altar with Laura Tempest Zakroff. And that was really like Tempest going, well, I'm going to write this chapter and you can write this chapter. And then I'm like, I'll write this chapter and then you'll do this. So really, we weren't exchanging ideas. We were just taking parts of the book. This was a really different process. So we have 3 contributors. There's Machiavelli, there's Ari, and then there's Amanda Lynn. Matt and Ari have been in our covens for 10 years.
Yeah.
So we work really well with them. We know them.
Amanda's been for just long.
Both of them, 10 years. Yeah. And sorry, I thought I said both of them.
You said Ari.
Oh,
because all he can think of is me.
That's true.
Of course.
You haunt my dreams. So we've all 4 been together for 10 years doing witchcraft and magic together. And for this book, really what we wanted to do is we wanted to take everybody's ideas and get it in the book. And I basically wrote most of the book, but I took down everybody's ideas and shaped the book from those ideas. So when we would have writing meetings, and we did this during the height of COVID, so it was really challenging sometimes and often much more over Zoom and Facebook and stuff than we would have preferred. You know, I would just ask them all questions about magic and take notes and then put all of that in the book. And so what you get in the book are 4 different perspectives. And I'd go through my notes and I would cross off everything that they had told me so I could get all of their stuff in. There are a couple spells that Matt and Amanda wrote. Mm-hmm. I edited a little bit to Llewellynify them. But it was a really different sort of process than the one with Laura.
Yeah. And how hard it was, like, okay, so like right now on March of 2022, we have different challenges other than COVID, right? But but back in the day when there was not a war and you were only writing and the only impending doom over our heads was COVID.
Well, we had fires.
Yeah.
Because California, you guys have fires all the time. How can you concentrate on talking about magic and changing your life when everything seems to be going haywire around you?
Well, that's exactly when we need magic, right? Like when we're doing everything that we can, we need that little oomph to help us get through, to help us feel like we have a little bit of control over the ridiculousness that's happening around us. That's where we need magic. So I don't think it was actually all that hard. We just had to make sure that we weren't just doing protection spells. I mean, you know, the first time we met to work on this book, it wasn't actually like the worst of the pandemic. We were able to like meet together. We were in our ritual room and we were like, okay, well, what would we do for this kind of spell? And we tried to mimic a lot of how we actually do magic in ritual. And Jason was in the background scribbling away and throwing his ideas out from where he was, but still trying to keep up with the other three of us. But that was the only time that was ever able to happen. After that, then it was like sitting in our backyard, you know, 8 feet away from each other, trying to talk through things. And then when the fires happened, you couldn't even sit outside. So that's when the Zoom happened, and that was even worse. So it took a while to get through that, because we, if we'd been able to do it the way we wanted, it would have come so much easier. But, you know, that was, I think the adversity actually like gave us a better perspective of the things that we needed to cover too. Like, we have to be able to do these things in this adversity. So, you know, we're magic workers, let's make this happen, you know? And then, so I do think that when times get tough and you've tried all of the things that you can do beyond, you know, mundanely, that's where magic comes in. You don't go to magic first. You do what you can, and then you add magic on top of it.
You mentioned the ritual room, the one time we got to do that. So when we do ritual as coven, I'm a good ritual writer, I think, but I'm not a particularly good writer of spells. And when we need spells in coven, Amanda, Matt, and Ari just do stuff. Mm-hmm. They just, it's like there's a hand on their shoulder and they're just walking around doing stuff, and they work really, really well together. Oh, yes. Without thinking about it. It'll just be like Matt going, I'm going to grab the road opener oil. Yeah. And Ari takes down a crystal and stuff. And really, we were trying to mimic that experience and having me turn it into something that could be read.
Yeah.
And that was fun. We didn't get to do that nearly as much, though, as we wanted.
Yeah, because I think what we were trying to achieve with it is to help people understand that magic doesn't have to be this exact set of words and this exact set of tools and this exact stone and whatever. You don't even need to plan ahead. You just need to put the intention out there and then kind of feel your own intuition and the energy around you and add what needs to be added to make it so.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that the book feels exactly like that. It feels like we are in that ritual room, and that we are kind of like peeking over your shoulders while you're all working. So before you actually thought about, okay, let's put this out for the world, who was the instigator? Who was the person who said, you know what, we can do a book together?
Oh, it's me. It is me.
I never thought I'd put my name on a book. I actually waffled about it, actually.
Yeah. I was just in the shower and I was thinking about a book, like, what's my next project going to be? And I thought of this book, like looking at all the different disciplines of magic and then kind of writing about how they work, because I'd never really seen that in print before. And I'm not very good at writing spells at all. I remember when I wrote my first book, I got my notes from the publisher back, and one of them was like, this spell's terrible. And I showed it to Ari and she's like, yes, this spell is terrible. This is what you did wrong. So I knew that if I was to write a magic book, I would really need help with the spells. So I sent a message to Matt, and he and I kind of said some like messages back and forth. And then while we were talking, we were like, we should have Amanda and Ari do this with us and make it the four of us.
Right.
And didn't take a whole lot to get everybody to agree. Ari's not somebody who sits down and writes necessarily. So she's always like, well, I don't know if I should have my name on the book.
I'm an idea person.
And I'm like, I steal so many ideas from you. You totally deserve your name on a book. Probably should have happened long before now. Yeah.
Yeah, that is, I hear you, because that's me. Like, I have all these ideas and I wanted to put them all in the book. And I'm like, I guess I'll write a book eventually.
My collaborators had never written a book before, though. So I felt like sometimes I kind of had to yell at them and prod them a little bit. Like, I need ideas for spells for this chapter of the book. And no more protection spells, no more money spells, no more love spells. You have to come up with something different, you know. But, you know, this is my job writing books. So
and obviously, you,
probably going to be the ringleader.
You squeeze over 100 spells from them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
What the?
It's hard. Oh, my goodness.
Writing spells is trickier than people think it is. Just because you don't want to repeat the same thing over and over again. And I think we cut some because I felt like they were too repetitive.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, though. Like, you know, we're witches. We use what works, right? And we all have our pets. We all have things that we go back to again and again. And, hey, Ari, you can't use citrine in every ritual, okay? You know, I mean, it's what you reach for because it's what you're comfortable with. And so, yeah, that got a little difficult trying to diversify. I didn't think it would be that hard, but I guess I should have guessed. We've been doing the spell a day calendar stuff for Llewellyn, and man, that's hard too.
Yeah. You were mentioning earlier a badly written spell. I have a theory, okay? I have a theory that if I am very, very new in magic and I want to do a spell and I want to do a love spell and I know nothing about nothing, and then I write to Mars. And I say, oh, Mars, please help me with this love situation. In my head, what happens is Mars gets the memo and goes, hey, Aphrodite, I got your mail, right? Or that Mars gets the memo and goes, humans, here, I'm gonna help you this one time. What do you think happens when a badly written spell falls in the wrong hands, or the right hands for that matter?
Well, I mean, sometimes a badly written spell, just nothing happens at all, you know. And you know, I mean, for me though, like, badly written, I don't ever write spells exactly. I talk about what I do and he writes the spell, because I have trouble putting those kinds of things into words. If it's somebody who really needs to write a spell in order to do it, you know, it, so many things can go wrong. For the most part, I don't think that you're going to accidentally summon demons, because that's just Hollywood mostly, but or, you know, books. But, if, you know, a badly written spell, maybe the outcome is not exactly what you intended because you weren't clear enough, or, you know, there just wasn't enough power in your own belief behind it to give it the kick that it needed to manifest. Or you just might sound like an idiot with some badly rhyming couplet. I don't know. It just, you know, you use the wrong stone and it doesn't quite have the right resonance, so it just kind of diffuses everywhere. It who knows. This particular spell was badly written because you're like, oh, that doesn't make sense.
The clarity.
Yeah,
right. Clarity, and then after that, maybe intent.
Yeah,
like if you're not like really clear about what you're doing. My first love spell was a disaster because it wasn't Ari. You would have been very illegal back then. I did a love spell, and I did a spell to fall in love. I mean, if you think about that, that is a terrible love spell because it doesn't suggest that the other person needs to reciprocate those feelings, right? So I fell in love with a lovely Mormon girl. That didn't help me at all. That wasn't what I was looking for, right? And yeah, poor spell. So you really have to think through the spell and figure out what it is that you actually want. But I was just in such a hurry to do the thing that I didn't. And I paid the price. Consequences. Wasted.
Absolutely.
A couple months.
Mm. Yeah. But look at where you are now.
Yeah.
Well, that was my life.
Yeah, that is her.
That was not written. It was just right.
The potion she poured in my cider or something. Jeez.
Whatever.
On the whiskey. So the part that I love about this book, as always, the writing that is so easy to just go, because it's like you're there with everybody doing the thing. But I also love that you added all this like tables and references and graphics and whatnot. It should be called the complete, you know, book of
But anytime you see the complete book of something, it's never actually complete.
Right, right.
We didn't want to fall into that trap.
I hope it's a good introduction for a lot of people. And if people have been practicing things for a long time, I hope that they can find things that are new and ideas that are new. But we spend 4 pages on sigil magic in the book. Laura Temp Zakharoff wrote an entire book about sigil magic. So, you know, you can't be really complete, but you can give people sort of an introduction.
Yeah, jumping off point.
Or a rudimentary sort of introduction to various different magical ideas and disciplines.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite chapter, Jason? What's your favorite part of this book?
That's a really good question, because it's like so many little pieces of the book. There's a really great part about using like things in your kitchen for magic that I really like. Not herbs. I think when we think of herbs, we think of like dried spices or something like that, but like using a banana or an orange or something molding in your freezer. That's what I like that. So that chapter was fun. I liked, there's a deep dive into some moral issues like using white sage or where we get our crystals and stones from that I usually don't see addressed in books. And I really like those passages. And weirdly, I thought this would be the worst chapter to write. I liked the knot chapter a lot.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be really difficult.
Yeah, and that was really fun.
Yeah, it was. See, we learned stuff while writing.
So what was your least or hardest?
Making the spreadsheet for the appendices.
Oh, yeah. Putting the appendices together.
I mean, that was my one contribution. I made a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
I must say that, I'm sorry, please finish your idea, and then I will say my idea.
No, it's such a good question. You know, I mean, there were challenges taking things that were given to me by my co-writers and then turning those into things. Because sometimes, you know, I'd get an idea for a spell and it'd be 2 sentences. Mm-hmm. And I can't really put that in the book. So I kind of have to expand upon it, you know, then I have to ask questions like, well, what about this? And what about that? Right. And I think my friends were getting annoyed with me, you know, because I'm, you know, trying to get this to a book. Because like writing a spell for yourself is different than writing a spell for a book that a bunch of people who don't know you are going to read.
Mm-hmm.
So there's sort of that challenge from taking the raw idea into something that you can put in a book manuscript.
I think it's really hard. And I have heard it with other authors when they're talking about like a practice that has been part of their everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you break down to steps for other folks to actually do the same thing? You know? Right.
Yeah, it's difficult because when something that comes to you so naturally, you automatically assume, well, this is simple. Come on, guys, you can get this. But no, you have to actually spell it out. Like I've mentioned it at least once before. I have a background in science, and writing a procedure is you have to make the assumption that somebody who's never even seen what you do can follow this and do it. So you have to say things like take the lid off the peanut butter jar when you're telling them how to make a sandwich.
Yeah.
There were times I would like call Matt and like, all right, I need to talk to you for 20 minutes, you know? And then when he's just talking to me though, the spell's so much easier, right? Yeah. Because he's more easily able to express what's going on with the spell, you know, but it's like, I just needed that to get it all down.
Yeah. I was going to say earlier that I love the table of contents actually, because you talk about something and then how to work with that thing. Mm-hmm. And then you talk, you know, I love it. I love it. So you were saying earlier, right? Instructions, open the toothpaste before you pour the, you know.
Yeah.
Can anybody who is curious about witchcraft read this book, or do they really have to have like more of a background?
No, not at all. This is a great beginner book.
Yeah.
It's probably the best beginner magic book ever written, to be honest. It's that good.
So that's what I wanted to hear. Thank you for your modesty and your honesty. Yeah. There's no modesty without honesty. Oh my God, I just made that up. So proud of myself. Yes, that's what I was looking for. Thank you, Jason. We did not practice this. This just came up because I like that you tap into everything. They are correspondences, they are colors, they are crystals, they are different ways of doing magic, etc., etc. It really is good for beginners, but I also love what you say, Ari, about if we get stuck on our own ways. So when we have a book such as this one, we find new ways of doing things. And even if you don't want to do it exactly like it's in the book, it gives you an
Right.
idea to mix things up.
Yeah. Nothing in there is an absolute. You know, I don't want anyone reading this thinking this is the only way you can do the spell. No, it's all suggestions and guidelines. Yeah.
It's a start,
It is,
right?
yeah, it's a jumping off point for you to build your own practice of spellcraft.
Absolutely.
And we say in the book that really the best spells are the ones that you write your own on your own. And if you're not comfortable doing that, take what's written and then just modify it a little bit so it works better for you. A spell book's like a cookbook, and when we use a cookbook, we don't always follow it exactly. Maybe we don't like a particular ingredient, so we leave it out. Maybe we don't have a particular ingredient, so
Yeah.
we substitute something else. And I think that's how spells work too.
Yeah.
You know, and if it doesn't make sense to you, which is something I say throughout the book, don't do it. There's a little bit in the book about pyrite, and this is like one of my favorite little anecdotes about writing the book. So, because you have four different voices in the book, sometimes we don't agree. So, we were talking about pyrite, and Matt and Amanda were like, I use it for money spells, right? Because it looks like gold and people associate it with money and stuff. And I was like, I would never use pyrite for that. I would use pyrite in a spell to confuse people because that's what it does, right? You think that it's gold and then it's not. So if you think that pyrite confuses people, you shouldn't use it in a money spell. If you think that pyrite is great for money spells, then you
Use
should
it.
use it. But a lot of it comes down to our own personal taste when it comes to different things. No absolutes. You know, there's not necessarily only one thing a certain stone or herb or oil is good for. You know, it could be dozens of things depending on different people.
It's how it resonates with you. And a lot of those things have to do with, your history with such things.
Absolutely. I have an anecdote for you. I'm Mexican from Mexico. We have this love story with obsidian, and the charge representation, whatever you want to call it, on the indigenous traditions that I have, is with the Tezcatlipoca, which is the god of representative of obsidian. And when I happened to tell somebody that I wanted to do my wand with a tip of obsidian, they lost their mind because how are you gonna put obsidian on a wand? And I'm like, you don't have to. I do. It is what value you give to the magic and how it works for you. I wouldn't want to have a magic wand that has pyrite or quartz. Like, no, like, give me my obsidian because I know what that means to me. Anyway. Thank you for listening to my anecdotes.
No, it's lovely.
I'll be here every Monday. What has to be absolutely said about this book that I haven't asked you yet?
Covered a lot of it. I can't think. We talked about how we wrote it. We
Yeah.
kind of talked about what's in it.
Oh, can I stop a minute and just say just how amazing Matt and Amanda are? Dear God. I mean, it would have been lovely to have them here tonight, but we couldn't. But, I've done some spellcraft with Matt and Amanda during ritual that just blew me away. And, it's one of those things like I've never been able to work so seamlessly with people, and for me, it's been a sign of like my own like path in this way that I have a group of people that I can actually do things in perfect love and perfect trust with because I can trust them with these, with like getting into, I guess it feels like almost a trance state where we're together working on this thing and we don't even need to talk to each other. We all just grab the right things for what we're trying to do, and we manage to get on the same wavelength, and it's absolutely amazing. And they both bring very, very unique insights to things. And yeah, there are moments that we do contradict each other in the book, because no two people are going to have the exact same, you know, life story, life experience. And so their magic is not going to be the exact same. And I actually really love that. And I really hope that it does show people that they can go their own way.
And I think people are just sort of better at different kinds of magic than other people. So like doing the book, like when we were doing the stones chapter,
yeah,
I just sat down with Ari and I was like, tell me about stones, right? Like have a gin and tonic. And I'll have some whiskey. Just tell me about stones. And then Amanda did all the oils. She loves oils, you know. Tell me about the oils. And then Matt did the herbs and stuff. And it's just great that everybody has their own little things. Mm-hmm. And then to have it all come together so nicely. And they're just terrific witches. And I'm so happy that we got to do this project with them. And that their names are on this book. I just love that.
Yeah. It is amazing. And thank you so much for giving a shout out to them. Because... it is indeed a shame that they couldn't be here tonight, but you know, this wonderful book is out there for everybody to have, to read, and to see a different flavor of Jason Mankey, because you have given us so many different pieces of work, but this one hits different, you know, because this comes from, if I may say, family, right? This is your magical family's legacy, history, or work of art that you all did together, and that is great.
And it required a lot less footnotes than all the other books, which in a lot of ways made it easier to write.
That's,
you know,
hard.
I think there's like 300 in the Horned God book.
Yeah, well,
there's 500 in the Greek Gods book.
He still found a way to put like history and things in the book, because he'll never not find a way to put history in the book. But the point of the book was more action oriented, and you know, practice oriented, as opposed to just reviewing historical things.
Yeah, which is different for me, because I usually try to weave those two together, and this is a much more sort of practical experience.
Yeah,
yeah, and yeah.
Please.
Go ahead.
It just made it kind of more fun to write in that sense, mm-hmm. because you know, you're just kind of writing about what you do and what your friends do, instead of, oh well, there's this footnote here that I have to put in the book. And yeah, so I like that part of it.
So I have to ask you the question that I absolutely don't know the answer to. You all know I know the answer, but I have to ask you. So, my dears, where can people buy the Witch's Book of Spellcraft?
Well, at your local witch shop, hopefully.
Yes. And if they don't have it,
ask them for it.
Demand it. Demand it. Oh. I say, can I speak to the manager? I need the Witch's Book of Spellcraft, and I need it now. What are you doing?
We don't need everyone going Karen on all the poor witch shop owners, okay?
Yeah.
Let's not.
It's a Llewellyn book, though. You can get it anywhere.
It's a Llewellyn. As a Llewellyn, they have a pretty broad reach. So, you know, all the usual places you find books, you hopefully will be able to find it.
Yeah.
And it's coming out next month, right?
It's out.
It's out.
It was the date was March 8th, I think, officially.
And then
it like actually shipped like a week before that. So it's been out for a while. Couple days.
Yeah.
So far, the 5 reviews on Goodreads are not terrible. So that's exciting.
Yes.
That is awesome. How do people, other than writing those reviews and buying the book, obviously, how can we help you and support you as creators and doing this wonderful art that you both do? Other than buying your book, what else can we do to help you and support you?
Casey has a Patreon.
I have a Patreon, starts at $2. And that's really where I hope that people do, is the $2. Because it just seems more reasonable. So there's that. You know, follow me on social media. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. There's also the Witch With Books podcast that I do with Meg Rosenbrier.
Can you tell us about that podcast, please?
So there, Witch With Me started Witch With Books, because witches love books. And they used to have a book club And that was a lot of administrative work and stuff. And Meg and I were talking about the future of that. And she's like, we should just do a podcast, you and me. So we started in January. So we do it once a month with a big hour-long episode reviewing the latest books in the witchcraft and magical worlds. And then sometimes also talking about a few old ones and a few sort of like favorites in within the various genres of witchcraft. And then we have little bonus episodes from time to time with authors and about reading about the Sabbats and stuff. And you can find that wherever you get your podcasts on all the big platforms.
So you mean that people can actually do one podcast a month and you don't have to do nine?
Yes, what? That's why I left certain groups that wanted too much of me.
I always tell people, you know, like I only do 1 hour a week. And they're like, what? Like, you have to remember, I started doing a 3 hour podcast weekly.
You're so organized too. Like talking about you, you're like, well, Jason, I could have you on my show in 8 months. And I'm like, what? when I did mine, it was just me talking to people. It was like, I decided the guest that afternoon sometimes, you know, and you are planned out months in advance.
You just hoped Thorne would answer the phone?
Yeah, sometimes I just call Thorne Mooney and pray that she'd answer. You know, that was the plan for the night.
Well, let's hope everything that is planned comes to fruition, and even the things that are not planned. And yes, I don't have as many calendars anymore. I went from 11 to 10. So, you know, I'm working more efficiently, but thank you for saying that I'm organized, because it drives me crazy that I drive myself crazy sometimes. Anyway, save me from myself. Please, unbelievably, time has gone past. We are getting ready to say goodbye. But I will want you to please say goodnight to your audience tonight.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And with the world opening back up, if you're listening to this right when it comes out, I'll be at Paganicon in Minneapolis, Minnesota over Ostara weekend, Pagan Unity Festival in Tennessee, probably going to Mystic South in Atlanta.
That's July.
And that's in July. Pagan Unity Festival is the first weekend in June. Yeah, I think that's it for now. But it's nice. I can't wait to get back and do festivals and meet people and give them hugs. Or maybe we'll just awkwardly hug from a distance. I don't know what it's going to be like, but I'm looking forward to finding out.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be basic now that we, and I know it's weird, but I guess we're going to have to ask, like, are you hugging? Like,
we should always ask. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Ari, are you going to be going to all these events with Jason, or?
Probably not. I have a pretty ridiculous demanding day job, and so I don't get to go on as many adventures as Jason does.
I've got to be free, baby.
Whatever. No, you know, I go to what I can, which unfortunately is not anywhere near as much as I'd like. I've, you know, going to these things, I meet so many great people. It just, you know, I have to maintain my Bigfoot mystery status. So.
Oh, and yeah. We'll be at Atlantis Bookstore.
Oh, yeah. That one.
In the first week of May.
Where is that?
In London, England.
London, England.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bring me something. No, I'm just kidding. obviously. Well, it has been, as always, a pleasure and a joy to have you, Jason, back on the show. The next book is coming out then towards the end of the year, and needless to say, we have to book that now.
So if we book it now, I'll probably be on in January or February of next year.
Probably. No, November is open. July, not so much. But anywho, thank you so much, Ari, for letting us know you, and I know that keeping that status of a figment of Jason's imagination is hard work, but thank you for being the wonderful companion that you seem to be. For both of you, thank you so much. My gratitude for this wonderful show, and to everybody, just to remind you that we have over 700 hours of podcasts on CSN Podcast, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. We have Selena Fox's Nature Spirituality and Nature Mystic on Sundays and Wednesdays. We have Lunatic Mondays where yours truly, obviously, every Monday. The first Monday is in Spanish. We have Paganos del Mundo on Spanish and Portuguese on every Saturday. We have Moon Magic two Thursdays a month. And we have Circle Talk two Tuesdays a month. And with that, I bid you adieu, everybody. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching, whoever gets to watch this. Yes, there's a video. Hello! And to everybody, never forget that you are loved. Bye-bye.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.